This is Mark Silverman, co-author of Rogue Mobster, the untold story of Mark Silverman and the New England Mafia. The story chronicles the mob wars of the 1990s when over two dozen gangsters were killed for control of the Boston underworld. When the infamous gangster James Whitey Bulger went on the limb in 1995, the streets of Boston became a war zone between the Mafia and the Renegades, with the Winter Hill Gang looking on. My account is the first ever glimpse into what went on at street level, why guys were killed, and what the stakes were. Rogue Mobster, the untold story of Mark Silverman and the New England Mafia, can be purchased online from Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and most other booksellers on the web.
To Authors First on the Artists First World Radio Network, artistsfirst.com. Tony Kay in the studio. Thanks for joining us, everyone. If you are an author or independent recorded artist, we'd love to hear from you. Simply follow the links we've provided on our homepage at artistsfirst.com. This hour, it's my privilege to introduce Melanie Rosen. She's a poet. For your convenience, we have her website directing to her book placed on our homepage. It's www.neolitteratiperess.com. Let's give a warm welcome to our guest. How do you do, Melanie?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Thank you very much for joining us. I believe you're from the great state of Texas.
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, yeah? Is that right? Born and raised?
Born and raised in Houston, going to school in Dallas right now.
How nice. I have relatives outside of Dallas. I've been there many times, and to Houston, and as actually I'm a graduate of Lubbock Christian University in Lubbock, Texas.
Okay.
Do you know where that is? That's in the Panhandle.
Yes, I do.
And my sister attended Abilene Christian University.
Yes.
Yeah, so at any rate, I'm very familiar with that state, and it's a great,
great
place.
State.
It's a great place. It really is. And Houston is a lovely town, a big city.
It's spread
out, and it just keeps growing. I don't know how many streets you're up to now, but it's got to be large.
Keeps getting bigger and bigger.
I know it. Well, Melanie, was writing something that you were interested in as a child? Did this journey of penning your words, did that come naturally and at a young age?
Yes, it did. I actually started writing poetry when I was about 8 years old. I was in third grade, and I participated in this activity at my elementary school called Writer's Circle, where we just get together once a week before class and write together and share our work with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take long. If you have an interest in literature, reading, writing, birds of a feather flock together. So it didn't take long for you to find other people who had a similar interest.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, that's exciting. And currently, I believe you're at university, right?
Yes, I'm currently a sophomore at Southern Methodist University in Dallas.
Congratulations. And
thank you.
What's your topic there? Are you studying literature and English?
I'm an English major.
English major. And do you hope to make a living doing that?
I'm actually pre-law.
So there you go.
But I'll definitely keep writing.
There you go. You know, you don't give up that day job.
No.
But nonetheless, political science, literature, history, law, liberal arts, these are topics of great interest to you.
Yes.
And you're carrying a full load, I take it.
Yes, I am.
Well, God bless you, sister. It's tough. It is. I know. I went to college and graduate school, two different graduate schools, a couple masters, 20 hours from a doctorate, and I didn't think I would ever stop. As a matter of fact, I would have been content, I think, to live in the academic world. I love literature. I love reading and ancient languages and literature. So if you find that passion, that thing that really motivates you every day, you'll never be disappointed.
Nope. Just keep doing it as long as I can.
But now, poems, they come in many forms. Do you also have an interest in music? Do you think that poetry is a musical genre for you?
I think it is. I've actually played two instruments. I've been playing the piano since I was six, and I started playing the guitar when I was 11. So I've always had an interest in music as well.
And, you know, it fits together, right? I mean, poetry, mm-hmm. the thought of graphically describing things with words that have deep meanings and symbols.
Yes.
You find that in music everywhere and in poetry.
Yes.
So do you think that maybe there's a hidden songwriter here?
I don't know. I've never tried that before, but you never know.
Yeah. Well, if you have the guitar and the piano and you have lyrics, wow.
Might have to try that someday.
We'll have you back as an independent recorded artist.
Thank you.
Melanie, you're having a fabulous time. Second year of college, just about yeah. coming to a conclusion. You pretty well know where you want to end up. In law, practicing law, and
yes.
You're at a great university. I believe you said Southern Methodist?
Yes.
So, you know, they have a outstanding curriculum mm-hmm. for you. And are you finding other poets to associate with there at university?
Yes, I'm actually in a poetry workshop class right now. So I have sometimes just designated to work with other students and my professor and just workshop poems with them.
Yeah. Is that how this book came into being, because of this class? Has this been a long project where you'd been writing poems since a child and you finally decided, hey, I've got enough material here to publish?
Well, most of the poems in the book came from when I was in high school, probably about ages 16, 17, 18. And I started doing research on publishers before I came to SMU, just sending them samples and query letters and kind of seeing where I stood with them. But I had a goal to get my first collection published before I graduated from college.
And you've done that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a big project.
It was.
I mean, even if you said, well, I have all of these poems. I wrote them in high school. They're 5 or 6 years old. They're there. That doesn't mean it's finished.
No, it took some time to go through them and put them together. And, you know, some of them kind of echo each other. And I feel like it's cohesive as for a collection as a whole.
Did you find that you had difficulty organizing the material, or did you allow time, in other words, chronology, to do that for you? In other words, the poems you've selected, how are they organized in the book?
Well, the collection is in three parts, and I think the first part, the poems in that part more so have to do with observations and things that the speaker sees in her world. The second part goes beyond just observations a little bit more and takes in what the speaker learns from those observations. And then the third part goes even beyond that, and the speaker applies what she's learned and observed to her life. So there's kind of a progression as you move through the poems.
Wow, that's a unique approach. Did you derive this method after assembling the poems and sifting through them, and then you decided this would be the best way for the audience to understand or organize the material?
Yes, that's pretty much what I did. I just took the time to look through all of them and organize them in different ways, and I thought this was the best way to put them.
Now, some poets will also provide a backdrop for a poem, perhaps describing a period of their life or what they were going through at the time or a setting. Do you do any of that?
I don't really do any of that, but I do have a quotation at the beginning of the collection that I think is indicative of the collection as a whole.
Can you read that for our audience?
Yes. The quotation is from William Shakespeare's King Lear, and it reads, "The weight of this sad time we must obey, speak what we feel, not what we ought to say." And I chose this collection because I feel like in these poems, the speaker is not hiding how she feels or trying to make words come out in a way that they're not supposed to. As a writer, I'm just writing the truth, and I'm writing exactly how I feel and responding to what I observe in the world, because I think that even through sad times, the truth is beautiful, because it's how we understand, accept, and learn and move on. And it was my hope that through publishing this collection that my writing would be able to help people do all of these things.
Wow. Your parents must be amazed.
I think they're pretty proud of me.
Yeah. It's not everyone who actually goes through the discipline, the sacrifice, the effort to accumulate their materials and be willing to just lay them out. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's very it's putting your emotions on the sleeve, so to speak.
Yes.
Were there private moments or certain hesitancies, perhaps, that you had in just making that choice?
Actually, not really. I think a lot of people are surprised when I tell them that probably 90% of the poems in this collection aren't personal poems. They're more so things that I've observed in the news or I've read in literature. There's a lot of poems that I've written in response to things I've read in English classes or things that my friends have come to talk to me about.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because typically first authors are prone to write very personal, intimate details because mm-hmm. that's what they're familiar with. That's where they're journaling or working through issues that may have occurred in their life. That's where most new authors begin there, but not for you. You were fortunate to have a library of material where it was reflective on things you had observed in nature, in the world, in relationships, and now you're reflecting on that and putting it in poetic prose.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome. I always encourage the poets that we have on to give a reading. So, but before we do that, what is the title of the compilation, your book of poems, and where is it available on the web?
My book of poems is called 4 Feet from the Surface, and you can find it on Amazon if you just search the title of the poem or my name, Melanie Rosin. Or if you go to the website, you can also get the information there, and it's also available through small press distribution online.
You're of that age, Melanie Rosin, that you're probably very astute when it comes to the computer.
Yes.
Social networking. Are you on any sites?
I do have a Twitter account. You can follow me at Melanie Rosin, and I'll give updates on if I'm doing any kind of readings or interviews like this through my Twitter.
R-O-S-I-N, Rosin.
Yeah.
Thank you for the correction. Your parents are probably wondering if I can read. Okay, Rosin, R-O-S-I-N. And you're currently in Dallas, Texas. You're
yes.
presently at Southern Methodist University. You're studying counting, English, liberal arts, and you're planning on being an attorney
yes.
and a poet. And do you think that you'll stay in the genre of poetry, or are you going to dabble and perhaps write a novel?
Poetry is definitely my favorite genre right now. I've actually taken classes in nonfiction and fiction and playwriting, but I've always come back to poetry. Maybe later in my life I might try something else, but for right now I'll probably just focus on poems.
Yeah, why not? Give it a few years, right?
Yes.
And certainly there's always time for a novel. Well, you could start
someday.
That now, though. You could start the novel now.
It'll take that long, probably.
Yeah, it'll take at least 10 years. Yeah, I understand. And that's okay. That's all right. 4 Feet from the Surface, the topic,
yes.
The title, I should say, of your collection of poems, available all over the World Wide Web. And audience, for your convenience, we've placed NEOLITERATI. Press.com on the homepage. If you click the link and then select Melanie Rosin, you'll find her photograph, her bio, and of course the book. And but I don't see a method here of purchasing that book from this site. Is it
Yes.
Is it on Amazon?
Yes, it's on Amazon.
Okay, so if you have Amazon in your Android cell phone audience, you can simply put in 4, F-O-U-R, feet, F-E-E-T, from the Surface, S-U-R-F-A-C-E, and you'll find the book. Okay, now, you fell out of bed, you hit your head, and you decided it was time to put your poems out there.
Yes.
You began that journey. Was it difficult to bring all that together? Did it take a year? Is it 3 days? I mean, how long did it take to sort through everything and decide what was worthy and unworthy?
It took me a few months to go through and put the entire collection together after I'd written them, because I was doing this while taking care of other things.
Like going to college.
Yes, going to school, working. But after I'd done that, I spent probably about another month doing research on publishers, just independent poetry presses that who were looking for work that I thought mine fell in line with.
Wow.
And then I spent the fall of 2010 contacting publishers and waiting to hear back from them, and then I ended up signing my contract with Neo Literati Press the following February of 2011, so a little over a year ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you happy you went that direction?
Yes, I'm very happy.
Yeah, they're good people. And what about editorial assistance? Were your poems perfect?
I don't think they were perfect, but I worked my publisher, Shanti White, with Neo Literati Press. She helped me through the entire process from editing and designing the cover, and she really wanted to make sure that I was involved in the whole process, so she was very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, that can be one of the most painful experiences for any author, having someone else tell you what needs to be changed. But she did it gracefully, and you all worked out in the end.
Yeah, I'm very happy with what I have now.
What's the length of the book now?
The length of the book is about 85 pages, I believe, and it has 50 poems.
50 poems.
Yes.
And what age do you think would be best for the readership? Any age? Young adults?
I think it would work for any age.
Any age? Okay.
I think it covers a variety of topics that someone from every age could find something to relate to.
What about slang? Do you have any of that in the poems? Vulgarity or anything that others may be concerned about?
No slang, no vulgarity.
So it's a good, clean read. So a 14-year-old 14-year-old could read it. An 84-year-old could read it and be very happy. All right. Well, that helps. That's good information to know. Now, Melanie, I'd like for you to select your first reading.
Okay.
And set it up for our audience. give them a backdrop of where you were at, what frame of mind you were in, and what led you to write that particular poem.
Well, the first poem I'm going to read is called Glacier Avenue, and I wrote this poem in response to reading Shakespeare's play King Lear, and that's the play where the opening quote for the collection came from. And in King Lear, if you haven't read the play before, the essential plot is that a king is going to divide his land between his three daughters, and he wants his favorite daughter to tell him how much she loves him, but she can't wear her heart on her sleeve, and so he ends up banishing her and not giving any of her land, any of his land to her. And as a result of this banishment, the king kind of loses his mind and grows insane with the old age. And so this poem, Glacier Avenue, I wrote in response to that, more so having to deal with old age and like what results as because of that. So it's called Glacier Avenue. My grandmother steps into her car by the time the sun rises. Gusts of wind creep through the cracked window. Her wrinkles imply, through the rearview mirror's reflection, deep resemblance to her aging Toyota. A faulty AC, shredded cloth seats, a persistent clamor that echoes when the car starts. Constant notices that portray the turn of the clock. Grasping the wheel is her last attempt at independence. And closing my eyes, I can see her now. This woman driving down the avenue, land blanketed with snow, drifting as a blur, the sun setting warily behind her.
Wow. A tribute then?
No, not a tribute. Just something came up with in response to the play.
Yes, but I think for those listening, there seems to be an echo of someone in your life. Is that the case or not?
No, it actually doesn't have a personal connection. Just something I remember. I read King Lear in one of my English classes my senior year of high school, and something that we talked about relating it to like present day and age is that one of the things that people have trouble with when they grow old is losing their independence, and one of the things that constitutes that is, you know, maybe not being able to have the ability to drive or go to the grocery store.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm getting at. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have seen any of that in King Lear.
No.
None of it, okay? Not a Toyota, no torn seats, okay? I wouldn't have seen any of that. So you're bringing that story into your present reality.
Yes.
Into the 21st century, into your day-to-day way of observing life. I think that's fabulous. That's very creative and artistic.
Thank you.
I commend it. It's very well done. And it's brief. Is that by design? Do you find that most of your poems follow a short pattern rather than, you know, a long way of communicating or giving an image?
I think so. I think more of mine are on the shorter side. There are a couple poems that are longer than a page, but usually I try and say it in the least amount of words that I can.
Yeah, I mean, who was it? Frost? I think some of his poems go on like a chapter, you know.
Yeah, some of them are long.
Right. So every poet has a comfort zone, and you enjoy working in that narrow frame.
Yes.
I think it would take time. To really find the right word.
Mm-hmm. I think writing shorter poems is harder than writing longer poems because you really have to work on word economy and making sure that every word is significant.
Now, you obviously have a love of Shakespeare.
Yes.
So do you find him and that work inspiring, motivating?
I do. I took an English class my senior year of high school that was where we only read Shakespeare and talked about how it related to the present day. And I was really inspired to start working on my collection after I finished that class, because many of the poems in this collection came as a result of that class and in response to things that we read.
How did you get over all of those these and thous and British ways of communicating, or were the works you were reading from modernized in some sense?
Well, we mostly just read the original plays, and then every once in a while we would read, you know, modernized versions of his plays or works like poetry or novels that kind of just were written in response to Shakespeare's works. But for his actual plays, it definitely took a little bit of getting used to at first, but once you are a few plays in, you just get used to the language, and it seemed natural after that.
Have you had opportunity to see some of the Shakespearean acts performed on stage?
Yes, I have.
Oh, boy, that has to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that very exciting. If you've read the material and now you can go actually watch it performed, that makes all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you go to a poetry reading, you get to hear the work of art as it was meant to be heard, and it's a different experience completely.
Do you envision, Melanie, that you'll be doing some of those readings publicly?
Yeah, I would hope so. I actually did a reading at SMU a few weeks ago.
Wow. That must have been a nervous moment.
I was a little bit nervous before, but it went well, and it was a really good experience.
And you shared with me off the air that this was your first radio interview.
Yes.
Congratulations, Melanie.
Thank you.
Welcome to the literary world. Thank you for supporting the arts on the Artist First World Radio Network. And to our 85,000-plus listeners out there, be sure to follow the link we've provided at artistfirst.com. The broadcasts are all MP3 formatted, available free on demand, as will Melanie's interview. You'll be able to Twitter, Facebook, use all of the social network sites to tell people about the interview so that they can listen to it on demand. So, Melanie, thank you for being our guest on Authors First. Tony Kaye in the studio. If you are an author, independent recorded artist, we'd love to hear from you. Follow the links we have on our homepage, artistfirst.com. And certainly go to Amazon.com and put in four, F-O-U-R, feet, F-E-E-T, from the surface. And you'll locate our author and the book of poems. 50 in the collection?
Yes.
And your first release?
Yes, this is my first release of the collection.
You've learned a lot about the literary world just in that process. The time, it's not just writing the material, and then it's organizing the material, then it's editorializing and correcting the material, and then it's locating a proper publisher, getting it out there. Now it's right there in your face. It's a finished product.
Feels good to be on the other side of the process now.
Yeah, and that you'll always be able to say that you're a published author.
Yes.
So congratulations and
thank you
on this endeavor, and thank you for supporting the arts on the Artist First World Radio Network and for being our guest this hour and sharing the backdrop. Now, of the 50 poems, is there a favorite?
There are definitely a few. I probably couldn't pick one, but I could probably pick a handful that are my favorite.
I know. It's like deciding, you know, hey, I have 50 children. Which one do I love the most? I know. It's hard to choose, isn't it? And I imagine that could change, right? You could say, well, when I was at this age and place of my life, this was my favorite. And then over here now, this is my favorite, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that can change over time.
I go through phases of which poems I like the best.
And you know, that's the great thing about poetry. It can mean so many things at any moment. You may read it today, and yet tomorrow something could happen, or your thoughts would be somewhere, and then you read the poem, and it's like a brand new poem.
Mm-hmm. They change with the experience.
Yeah. And, of course, you've read at the university, local libraries, high schools, college, or elementary schools. There's all kinds of venues, and you should pursue as much public speaking as you can and public reading as you can, because you'll get better and better at it, and that verbalization of your poetry will help you become a better poet.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that you will continue to do that and not be timid or afraid to stand in front of any audience.
Yeah, I definitely hope to have a few more opportunities in the upcoming year to get to read my poetry again.
Oh, boy. Okay, so do you have another one you'd like to share?
Sure. The next one I'll read is called Melting. And I think this is a good one to follow the first poem that I read with, because it was also written in response to King Lear, but in a different way. After we read King Lear in my English class, we read a novel called A Thousand Acres by Jane Smiley, which takes the story of King Lear, but sets it in a 1950s Iowa farm through one of the daughter's perspective. So it's completely different, but one of the themes that Jane Smiley's novel pronounced more rather than Shakespeare's play was the ephemeral qualities of time and distinguishing the difference between what's lasting and what is fading. And so this is called Melting. I remember sitting on the wooden deck, your feet dangling just enough to graze the lake's surface while mine hung inches above. And we drank water chilled with ice cubes in the shape of stars. You told me the freezer could somehow transform the common cubes. I believed there was a magic to our simple drink, and I marveled at the way bits of frost could form the same five-pointed shapes that lit up the sky at night. 2 months after your cancer had spread, I remember sitting in the kitchen and watching Nana fill a plastic tray covered in star-shaped cutouts with water. 3 hours later, I saw her take out the tray and force the frozen formations out of their confines and into a glass. I walked over and placed one in my hand, appalled by the lackluster truth that was reality. And I held the man-made star in my palm until it melted away, leaving me with wintry drops that mirrored my tears. And in that moment, I realized I'd lose you soon, and I felt like my world was dissolving into nothingness.
Wow, that's pretty deep.
Yeah.
How old were you when you wrote that poem?
I think I was 18 when I wrote this, so not too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of maturity there.
Mm-hmm.
Are you the oldest? Do you have siblings? Are you only child? Tell me a little bit about your home life.
I have one older sister. She's 4 years older than me.
Does she like your poetry?
I think so. She's not a very English person. She's actually in medical school right now, so she's more into the sciences.
Oh, okay. So she she's having to learn the pharmaceutical language.
Yes.
And the Latin and the chemistry and the biology, human anatomy, physiology. Wonderful. Okay.
Yes, she works with a very different language.
Right. My daughter is in her final year, graduate school, University of Akron, in nursing.
Okay.
Same thing. You got to see her books. Yeah. They're about 3 inches thick, right? So I fully understand that she's obviously different than you are, and that's okay.
Yes.
That's okay. But she does at least have some appreciation and respect for what you've accomplished.
Yes.
Well, that means a lot. It really mm-hmm. does. Is she attending the same university?
No, she's not. She goes to school in Houston.
Oh, your poor parents. Couldn't do your, you know, my kids did the same thing. They all had to go to a different school. I had a son
at least we're all in the same state.
Yeah, well, I had a son at OU, Ohio University in Athens, a son at Ohio State University, a son at Kent State University, and a daughter University of Akron, but all in the same state, Ohio, but four different schools. So, and we had them all in at the same time.
You have your work cut out for you?
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm always working. But I love it. I love what I do. We have a great company here at artistfirst.com. Over 4 million downloads a month from our library of 5,000 hours available free on demand from every nation on earth. So it's a fabulous venue, and I can't thank you enough for being our guest, for sharing your life, your story, the book, your poems, and what goes into creating, crafting a collection of 50 poems. It's quite an accomplishment, and I'm very happy for you at such a young age to begin this journey.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
You know, it'll get easier. You know, I in a sense, unless you have writer's block, but you have time on your hands, so, you know, you were perfectly happy to pound out a few poems a year, and you know, a few years later, you've got enough for a collection.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you? We spent a lot of time talking about your interest in Shakespearean methodology and material, and the emotions, the impact it has on you. Do you, Melanie, also have an interest in nature, or are you a people watcher, or? Do you write poems of a different bent?
I wouldn't really say that I'm that interested in nature, but something that I do, I always carry a notebook with me, and no matter where I am, it might just be something that I observe happen before me or something that I think of, and it just sits with me a certain way. I'll just take out my notebook and jot it down, and that might be something that I use for material later.
Wow. Okay. Do you have a poem you could select that's a little different than the previous two?
Sure. I'll read the poem that the collection was named after, 4 feet from the surface. The sky creases and folds above me, changing shapes like a kaleidoscope. With each movement, my arms conjure up in this cauldron like sea. Mid-July rays make the water pleasantly warm. I can feel the tickle on the soles of my feet when fish swim by every few moments. This is a whole other world, a place whose beauty I've just realized. Even in the murky water, through the fear of the unknown, there's beauty to this place, and there's nothing separating this water from land.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's extremely contemplative. I think that this is a book that's for those who love poetry, this is a book they're going to enjoy.
Yeah.
And not everyone loves poetry, okay? As disappointing as that may sound. And some love it more than others. Will you belong to any groups? I think you mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that you were a part of a poetry group.
Yes. I'm part of a poetry workshop at Southern Methodist University right now.
And do you read these poems?
Yes. We will usually have an assignment before, and then we bring them to the workshop, and we'll read them and discuss them together.
What's the reaction? I mean, you've been at this probably longer than most that are there.
I mean, there's always room for improvement. A lot of the assignments take on forms or ideas that I've never tackled before, so it's always new challenges for me.
You know, I know that today a lot of rap has similarities with poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why at the beginning of the broadcast, Melanie, I brought up music, and you have musical interest.
Yes.
Do you think that you get into a musical rhythm when you write your poetry? Does it have a cadence to it?
I think some of it does. Like the first poem that I read for you, Glacier Avenue, it's a Shakespearean sonnet, and so it's written in iambic pentameter. And so there's definitely a musicality and a rhythm to that. But then other poems, like the one that I just read, 4 Feet from the Surface, I'm not writing with any particular meter or rhythm in mind. And so it's just whatever comes out.
They're highly personal.
Yes.
You know, and therein is the problem with poetry for some. You know, you really have to. That's why word selection is so important. Mm-hmm. How do you convey a meaning that will place the reader in a position that you're at,
mm-hmm.
as the writer?
Just definitely you keep in mind, like, what words that you want to choose. Sometimes I'll put a word and I'll think to myself, is there any other word that I could put in? Like, could this be replaceable? And if it is replaceable, then you're probably not using the right word. Like in Glacier Avenue, just the word itself, glacier, in the title, that brings so much more to the poem. Glacier Avenue can describe the name of the street that the old lady is traveling on, but also glacier brings the connotations of the cold and winter, and winter is usually associated with aging, and so that relates to that too. And there's just usually words that I choose have multiple reasons for having that word in the poem.
Now, you mentioned that there are three distinct categories of material in the book of your 50.
Yes.
Have we read one from each section now?
Yes, we have.
Okay. Of the three, do you have a favorite? Do you feel like one particular section did more to express or communicate you than another, or are they pretty well balanced?
I think they're pretty well balanced, but if I had to choose one, I'd probably pick the third section as my favorite, because it really takes more than just passive observations or statements and goes beyond that to learning and applying them to life.
Melanie, are you going to college in the summer?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so you'll have 3 months then to write, think, and speak.
Yes.
Will you be attending any book fairs, book shows? Where can the public in Texas see you?
Well, I'll be in Houston for the first half of the summer, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be attending any book shows yet, but hopefully I'll make it to some.
And if you do, will you have a website that's your own, a blog to communicate, or just your social network sites? In other words, are you intending on having a dedicated website all about you and all about your book and what you're interested in?
I'll probably get one soon, but for now, listeners can keep up with what's going on either on my Twitter or through neoliteratipress.com.
All right. Well, very good. You're on the computer a lot?
Yes.
So you'll design your own website when you're ready?
Probably.
Yeah, that's good. I hear that a lot from authors. And do you use the computer to write your poems, or I know you mentioned previously you carry a notebook and so forth, but do you also get inspired at a moment and type something out?
Yeah, I use both. Sometimes I won't have my computer with me. I'll just have my notebook. And so if I think of something, I'll just write the draft out there. But other times I might be in my room with my laptop sitting at my desk and something might come to me, and so I'll use my laptop.
Oh, how exciting. Yeah, the technology is amazing today.
Yeah.
Our previous guest, Hugo, great gentleman. He was born in Mexico, and Spanish is his first language, and then English, of course, not native to that, but his second language. He struggled. He decided to use a program that allowed him to speak, and then it would type.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I thought that was ingenious.
Mm-hmm. I've never used that before.
No, and but there are just so many tools available today for authors such as yourself online to promote yourself, press releases, free press release, associations for poets, outlets to place your material in. So there's a lot of marketing, and guerrilla marketing, of course, would be your local library speaking engagements and schools and other public venues.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have to wear that hat. I mean, if you want to be successful and have your book of poems out there and recognized, it's going to take a lot of publicity.
Yes. It's a lot of work.
So I think you're up for it.
I think so, too.
Yeah, you'll be okay. But the computer, you can do a lot of it just online.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that your book is reviewed, making sure that it's out there, that you make sure that your other people in your social networks know about it and promote it on their websites.
Mm-hmm.
And that will bring you a greater level of visibility. And certainly being on the Artist First Radio Network is a great way to do it, too. So
yep, great opportunity.
Thank you for being my guest, Tony King, in the studio, and for sharing your book of poems. And before I let you go, I'd like for you to read one more.
Okay. To close us off, I'll read the final poem in the collection, and it's called What is Lasting? The buzz from my morning cup of coffee dissolves after a few hours. The overflowing applause at a performance's end diminished with each second. The quality of the lace on my grandmother's dress thinned by time. But all of these things, lasting, not in themselves, but in the memories they leave imprinted in my mind. Remembering how I made it through the morning with only 3 hours of sleep. The satisfaction of pleasing an auditorium full of people. How beautifully the aging lace felt against my fingers. And above all else, the joy of taking the ephemeral qualities of life and making them eternal.
How beautiful. Thank you for the readings today, for being our guest. Before I let you go, any concluding remarks or anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to?
I just want to thank you for having me, and I want to thank my publisher, Shanti White, with Neo Literati Press, for helping me just have the final product of my book, and without that, I wouldn't be here for the interview right now.